You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I want to be a producer with a hit show on Broadway. I want to be a producer.
Hey, everybody. Don't forget this Wednesday, special webinar, how to sell tickets with social media. It can be done. And don't forget, you can get this webinar for free when you join the ProducersPerspectivePro.com. Now on with the podcast.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Hello, everyone. It's time for another Producer's Perspective podcast. I am Ken Davenport. My guest today is one of those folks in the biz that usually arranges interviews instead of being interviewed. He's one of the few, the proud, one of the most powerful press agents on Broadway. Welcome, press agent Adrian Brian Brown. Welcome, Adrian.
Thank you, Ken.
Adrian, along with his partner Chris Bono, runs Bono Brian Brown, and I won't list off all their credits because we'd be here until 2087. Just a few. This season's Waitress, upcoming Paramore, My Spring Awakening, as well as Something Rotten, The Audience, Motown, Curious Incident, and so on and so on. Go to theplaybillvault.com to check them all out. Last year, Adrian won the Tony Award for Excellence in Theater, which was mind-blowing to me because he's probably going to work in the business for another 40, 50 years. So, Adrian, let's start with this. I want you to imagine you're in North Dakota. Have you ever been to North Dakota?
I have been to North Dakota. It is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Imagine you're there.
Great theater town.
I've played North Dakota. Grand Forks. And you're at a bar in North Dakota, and you're sitting next to someone who has never seen a Broadway show before, and they say, hey, you there with the accent, what do you do for a living? What would you say?
Have you heard of this thing called Hamilton?
Uh-huh, I get it.
That's always a way in. No, I think we're storytellers. I'm from a grand tradition of Broadway storytellers, and you have the most magnificent stories being told on Broadway, and I've been lucky enough to be someone who tells that story. And so what is that story? What is this thing? Broadway is this unbelievable communal gathering of completely disparate people, hopefully, who have come together to do something as old as time, tell a story. And my role is to share that and to take that 2-hour, 2.5-hour show and tell the world about it. And so here in North Dakota, you may not have heard about it, but you've been to a movie, and this is like that, only much better. You've watched television. It's like that, slightly better, because TV is so good. But that's what I do. I go out and I bang the drum to tell people about this thing called Broadway.
So how did you get into this storytelling business of yours?
How did I get into the storytelling business? Well, I got a degree in biology, which I thought was very important, from the University of London in a college called Royal Holloway College in Egham, Surrey. Egham is on like the flight path over Heathrow, and that's about one of the most distinguishing features of it.
One podcast listener just went, woohoo!
Yeah, Egham! So we go. I'm very fortunate in that I've grown up in London and New York. My folks came over to New York when I was very young, so I was sent to school in England but came here. And I was kind of spoiled rotten. I was sent to a lot of theatre and took myself to a lot of theatre in both New York and London. But I decided, or my folks decided, get a degree in something sensible before you have any idea of working in show business. And of course, so I said, okay, I like biology. It's the most artistic of the sciences, he said pretentiously. And I then said, okay, I want to go to UCLA Film School now and I want to make movies. It was right the summer of Star Wars, and I thought, I am the next George Lucas. I went there for a summer and I didn't like LA. To all you people out there, I now love LA. I was very young. I didn't get it. So I went to film school for a bit, and then I came back to New York and I became an expert at making the Carvel Cookie Puss. Carvel ice cream, one of their great cakes was the Cookie Puss. I made a brilliant one. And after a couple of months of that, I thought there is more to life than making ice cream sandwiches. And I was introduced to a woman called Susan Block, who was a press agent who had worked at Lincoln Center. And I just went there part-time to see what it was. And after about 3 weeks, I realized, this is really cool. This is storytelling. You know, I call up a journalist, or I send a press release to a journalist saying, this thing is happening, this event is happening, this show is happening. And then, you know, occasionally it appears in the paper. You think, wow, I've now gone from this little story that was just me telling this journalist to several hundred thousand people who might actually see this story. And so there was the gratification and sort of ego reward, if you like, of like, ooh, you know, I can sell this. And you're selling an idea, and you're selling a happy idea. And so that was very seductive. Now, I also analyzed at that point, or a little bit later, that I had always been someone who watched how press and media works. As a kid, I was obsessed with the space program, and I used to clip newspapers. Whenever I saw an article about the space program, I'd clip it. There were certain movies I liked, or movie directors I liked, even like as an early teenager, and I would clip those reviews and sort of follow the pattern of careers. So I guess, looking back, I was sort of destined to be someone who was obsessive about that storytelling and gathering of the information, with the idea that, you know, other people should know about this too, and I could be instrumental in helping them do that.
What do you think makes a great press agent? Is it contact to reviewers? Is it, what are the characteristics that go into making it?
I think that the ones I always admire are people who can see in the most ordinary looking thing something that is exciting, that can connect with the zeitgeist, horrible word, but I mean, but can connect with the current mood. So, you know, it could be a Strindberg play, but maybe there's something about the way it's designed, directed, acted, that relates to Donald Trump's campaign. What can you see in a project that may just look, there's nothing like an ordinary play, but just like a traditional play, that makes it resonate? Maybe it's an extraordinary performance that is truly not just hyperbole, but really is a great performance. Maybe it is the design. Maybe it is the way the director staged it. So who can find those stories and get them to the right people to amplify it? And also, I mean, what I learned from Lee Salters, who is an all-time great, was that the story is never over. So you do a photo opportunity about the ringing in Barnum elephant's coming to town. And, you know, that's great. You get pictures in the paper of the elephant's coming to town. Everyone loves that shot of them coming through the tunnel. But then the good press agent also does a story on how the elephant poop is used in Sisi's guest's garden to grow roses. And these are stunning prize-winning roses that need the poop from the elephants that are coming through the tunnel. And then you complete the story by placing somewhere else that these roses are then used to decorate the opening night party when Barnum and Bailey open. So it's squeezing every possible opportunity, finding every area. And I think that's what creative press agents do. You don't fabricate it, but you find what's interesting. You distill it. And they cut through the noise that we all face to point out these are the three reasons why this is interesting. And they help people do that. So you tell more story. And so that's what my heroes do who do this business.
Well, and I will just tell everyone about how you did exactly that on Spring Awakening. When I called you, I remember saying, hey, I'm doing Def West Spring Awakening on Broadway and I want to do it. And it was like you immediately clicked into the angle. I remember you saying, like, Ken, this is the year of diversity on Broadway and this will fit right into this story. It was just like you saw that angle very, very quickly. Is there something you do in your office as a whole? What do you have a process by, like, okay, how are we going to figure out the angle on this Strindberg play? Or
right. No, we do. We meet a lot, but we also it's because we set up teams in the office. You can find that sometimes you can get in a rut. You can find we've really thought this out. So we will have breakout where we will have the whole office talk about, okay, here's. I never say problem. Here's the challenge. You know, we've hit a dead end with these story ideas. What can you think of? And I'm a firm believer too in three things makes a trend. So if you can find three other shows or three other creative people who have the same story, can you package that? Can you present it to someone? And I think it's very healthy when we're in an environment of about 15 people to have that, so that you especially if you're fortunate enough to be working on long running shows, you kind of want to be stimulated to help find those ideas and to keep it fresh. Because the news cycle now is minutes. You know, in ye olde days when I started, you could place a story in a newspaper and you'd see a ripple effect for several days. Now an item runs online, and I think you may see a blip in sales then, but that item is old news in minutes. So we have to keep reinventing and retelling. Nothing, you can't coast on anything anymore. So if that extraordinary piece runs on 60 Minutes, you know you're going to sell a lot of tickets the next few days, but you want to have that to have a longer impact. So you repurpose it. You know, send it out through social media. You send it to people who, God forbid, were away when the show opened and don't know about it. So we have a lot of the discussions we have are not only how do you get and find and sell different angles, but how do you amplify them? And it goes back to picking up the elephant poop. And you it's, you know, the one story is great, but then, you know, who can do something with it? How can that be used to get another story or a follow-up? So, yes, I mean, that's how we work internally. We start as a small group of people working on a show, but there's the resource of a whole load of people who may just say, oh, I hear so-and-so is doing a roundup on something, and it needs that, because otherwise you become very isolated.
You mentioned a couple things that are new to the press world today, social media and news by the minute. What are some of the other examples of how press has changed since you began? And for the better or for the worse?
I mean, to sound like a really old fart, it really was about each Broadway opening, they got an advanced feature in the New York Times and a fabulous Hirschfeld drawing. And that was a given. And there were six local TV critics on opening night. You could literally, you know, at 11:15, you could be on the dial going click, 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 and then watch all the different reviews run sometimes over top of each other. But that was the medium. It was print was all important, and TV was this kind of useful place that no one was really sure about. Now, clearly, print has now become completely shattered, and we're in a world where we had to evaluate every opportunity in a different way, because just getting a story now is kind of irrelevant. It's what the story is and where it is and how it plays. So if Perez Hilton, who's, you know, a pop commentator, goes crazy about something and that's shared by a lot of people, that may have more influence than a rather stodgy review with a playwright in the New York Times, quite frankly. It's just, and we don't know, because that changes daily, what is the most important thing. So I think how it's changed is there is no formula anymore. We have to evaluate every opportunity, and every time we go to EW.com or L.com, we need to think about how many people it's reaching, what their message will be, will it lift it, will it separate it from other shows in the street, because we are competitive, not just with all entertainment, but with other shows. And I think that is the major change, that there is no, I don't think there ever was a real formula, but there's no structure. You have to keep reinventing what the campaign is. And it makes it way more interesting, but it's also way more unpredictable. And I think we've seen, certainly with advertising, we have no idea now what is effective advertising. We know we need to do it. We need to buy space in certain places. We do see direct response from certain direct mail, from email blasts, if you categorize that in the advertising. But you can't be certain of anything. So I think what we're finding is we are being more efficient about reaching the right people, but the messaging, we have to have more layers of it, because, you know, the one ad in the Times is not going to do it. The one direct mail piece is not going to do it. And I think there was a time when you could certainly launch that way. You could say, we'll take a Times ad, we'll do a direct mail piece, there'll be a certain amount of editorial, and the show, we'll get a launch and we'll see what we have. You can't do that anymore. You have to go on so many levels. And, you know, maybe as a result, we have refined the audience too much. We've shut out a lot of maybes because we're not even bothering to address them, because we can't afford to. If that makes sense.
What do you think press will look like in 10 to 20 years from now?
I think the editorial is becoming grayer and grayer, by which I mean it's become, if you look at a lot of the places that theater fans go to, they are ticket brokers, or they are ticket sellers directly. I mean, you could argue the New York Times has always been a ticket seller, but what I mean is that, you know, Broadway.com sells tickets. Playbill.com has a mailing list that sells tickets. So I think we're going to see more of that. I think we're going to see less traditional print interviews and the sites that represent those. So, I mean, like, say, the NewYorkTimes.com is going to still carry the same content, but it's going to feel more sales-driven. And I think eventually press will become indistinguishable from social media. I mean, right now, I think we still have the primary responsibility for coming up with those stories and selling that. And then social media is an adjunct to that, in that it shares them. And the way I think the press agent's role is going to change more is we are going to be seeing not just the people who are sharing and making the stories, but also coaching everyone involved. Because now every individual who is part of a Broadway show is a spokesperson, and in uncontrollable ways. And so I think our role is going to become much more, not just the cheerleader, but also the coach and the positioning leader, so that everyone is speaking not with one voice, but with the right voice about the production. And I think what's been interesting is seeing how that has evolved to, you know, certain Broadway actors or other players who have huge following on social networks, how their message can really help their show or hurt their show.
I never thought about that before. Normally, you'd have to give one actor, your star, a couple, some media training.
Right, right.
Now you have to think about the entire cast from every single chorus boy and make sure they're all on point and on message and not saying anything that
and some are great at social media. Some really have great intuition about it and are fun with it and clever with it. And also what's kind of nice is a lot of them are champions for Broadway as a whole. So it's not just proselytizing about your particular show. And that is a healthy reminder for us all that my job is to sell my show. It's very secondary to sell Broadway. And because that's not who pays me. And as much as I love all Broadway, that's not the point. But I think someone who is in a show, it's very healthy for them to say, I just saw Mormon last night. I thought it was brilliant. I think that's a very good, synergistic, helpful thing to do. I won't do that. Well, I will with Mormon, but I'm not going to sell someone else's show particularly. But that's, you know.
What about reviews? They matter as much today as they did yesterday?
Well, it's interesting that, isn't it? If you look at this week's grosses, which you don't have to look specifically at this week's grosses, but if you were to look at this week's grosses, the play with the smallest gross got a really very nice review from Ben Brantley a couple of weeks ago. The musical with the lowest gross got a very nice review from Charles Isherwood last week. Now, you could also say that there's several shows. Well, there's also shows like Beautiful, which I adore, which didn't get a very good review from the Times, but is in the top 10, doing incredibly well. I think it's, yes, they matter like crazy because they are telling people the show is here. They're like a trigger point. You know, it's fair game. They're open. It's no longer this thing in development. It's born. But at the same time, I think it's becoming rare and rarer that a review makes a hit. I think they help make a hit. And I also think bad shows that get bad reviews will close. Right? I mean, good shows that get bad reviews might actually make it. And we've got to remember it's about taste. It's a critic, you know, it's, I think more and more it's become politicized. I mean, I think in the days of Frank Rich, it was certainly quite political, but it was also matching very much the zeitgeist of the, what was being produced at the time, that he, you know, he wrote with opinion, and sometimes you felt that seems like he's pushing the agenda. But at the same time, I don't think he ever killed a really good show. He might have made them less successful, but anyway, so I'm waffling on to say, I think critics will always matter because they are an important part of the conversation. But I think the idea that it's going to be a bloodbath because all the critics didn't like it tends to happen to bad shows.
Yeah, I agree. We focus on it so much. Even people like me, I'm waiting, like pacing in the background, waiting.
No, we do.
And yet I know that Wicked didn't get the strongest review. I know this stuff, but still, there's just something about it.
No, because it's personal. It's very personal.
Like me, please like me.
Yeah, well, it's like me, but also, it's, and you think, oh, come on, guys, you know, it's like, you know, it's just as hard to put on a bad show as it is to put on a good show. It's like, come on.
Do you read the chat boards?
I do. But I can, you know, I mean, anyone reading them, you know what a plant is, you know what a thing is. It's funny. I mean, something happened this week, and I don't update this, but it's with Broadway World, which was very interesting. The idea that an actor says, you know what, this is really wrong and unkind, and expressed in a very sort of eloquent and not sort of whining way, saying that this is unnecessarily vicious, and you know, Broadway World's accepted that chat rooms should be put in a place where they are exactly that and not part of their news content. And I think that's great. But I also think the age of the chat room has passed because everyone can comment. I mean, it used to be that, you know, Talking Broadway was a place where you'd went because You couldn't read someone's blog. You couldn't read. And I think certain people are very outspoken, you know, in a more responsible way because they're identified. But I think people will express their opinions now. And I think the chat room and hiding behind that is now seen for what it is, which is just to, again, manipulate some agenda.
For those of you who didn't hear about the Broadway World scandal of last week, we'll call it that just because it sounds sexy.
Yeah.
But Patty Murin, Broadway actress Patty Murin, wrote a wonderful blog, and she has a blog. Go check it out, and where she talks about the chat boards, and just getting a little nasty and unnecessarily so.
Yeah. No. It's really bitchy, and it's I'm afraid because I do check them out too much. I totally like negate the extremes. You know, you figure, okay, these are just people who are out for something. And
Olympic scoring on the chat boards.
There you go. That's right. Totally.
The highest and the lowest go out. Out. In the middle. No, I look at them from time to time.
But from my point of view, what is important is that all writers and reporters read them too. So that there is an expectation, critics read them as well. So there is an expectation, no matter how detached they say they are, to sort of check something out or to it taints the agenda.
How many shows? Do you know how many shows you've worked on in your career? Do you know the number?
I believe it's more than 200.
More than 200.
Yeah.
So you've worked with a lot of different producers during that time.
I have worked with a lot of different producers.
Who's your favorite?
I couldn't answer that question.
Damn it!
They're all my favorite. But Ken, come on, it's you.
Of course, that's what
Thank
I
was looking for. Thank you. I had a brain fart. Sorry. Ken, how could you ask me that?
Exactly. What characteristics make up some of your favorite producers? What do you, in the handful of your favorites, what are they?
The ones who get it when you say, I'm sorry, they're not going to do a story. Those are my favorite. No, I think, look, I have such love and admiration for the profession because it's so, you are slapped and pushed and beaten at every turn. And I think there's a necessary blind passion that has to happen with a producer. And I think, you know, I like to work on projects because I like the producer. I can't always like their taste or like their show. That's the reality of it. But that's not to say I will just work on anything, but if a producer is really passionate about it, has the money, wants to do it, wants to get it on, you know, believes in it, has stuck with it for 20 years or less, but is just committed, how can you not say, I want to help you in any way I can? And so I think it's people who, or men and women who haven't just sort of bought a title or something, but have really found it and say, I really want to spend the next 5 years of my life making this live. And that's it. People who are saying that this matters so much that you know, it's not that I'm going to be a complete asshole and make everyone miserable, but I'm going to do anything I can to get an audience to come see this. That's the characteristic of that passion, which I can't necessarily share in what they're producing, but I can share their enthusiasm.
What's the biggest mistake that you think producers make when they think about press?
I think this is hard. I think it's the, as we mentioned earlier, it's very personal. When someone says something negative about your show, it's very personal. And I think it's not the biggest mistake, but I think the biggest misunderstanding is how you're doing the best you can. You are making a very important piece of work, but that will not necessarily be respected by everyone. And so someone may make a shitty offhand comment, that hurts because, you know, they don't have the background. They're just being lazy. But to try not to let it get to you. I think that's, you know, getting really wound up You know, like when Riedel writes a crappy column, it's horrible. And what's normally hurtful is there's probably a gem of truth in it. It's just the way he's written it is so destructive and mean. And you feel like shit. I mean, you just feel awful. And so what I would like to say, it's not a mistake, but what I like to impart to a producer is don't take it personally. Please, you know, write him a hate mail or phone him up and call him bad names. But don't make you think you've done something wrong. You haven't done anything wrong. You know, this is someone who's just trying to write some copy to sell a newspaper. And, you know, we all love Michael. That's what he does. But don't. So I think the biggest thing is, and it sounds so ridiculous. It's very personal, but don't take it personally.
This is a business that has in many of its professions, vendors, just a small group of people that provide it.
Yeah.
So press agents, for advertising agencies, and three of them handle pretty much all of Broadway.
Right.
Press agents, same thing. Invariably, you're going to end up with conflicts. You're going to end up with representing shows that are competing for the same Tony Award, perhaps, or certainly for two plays that may have similar audience.
Right.
This has happened to you, I assume.
It has. It's amazing, though, how rarely there's ever been a moment of having to make Sophie's Choice. Because they're either on slightly different trajectories, they're in different areas, they one might be a musical revival, one might be a musical. But no two shows are the same. And I think that's part of what we do. I mean, if we're doing it well, we exploit those areas that make it different, that make it special, that make it unique. And I can't, I mean, listen, I'm sure it's being perceived as such, but I've never had a moment where I've thought, holy shit, I've got to, like, not do that because of this one. It's never really happened. And even though we have had, say, two plays in the same category or whatever, it's not like one has been shortchanged. And I'd like to believe that we've done as good a job as someone who didn't have that perceived conflict by selling a story.
Is there a piece of press in your career that you're most proud of? Like one article or television appearance or something? What's the thing?
It's more, you know, it's part of the survival technique is to try and eradicate the bad stuff. And unfortunately, what happens along the way is you forget a lot of the good stuff too. I love the really silly things. Like, I mean, I'll never forget when the little theater was being renamed the Helen Hayes Theater because they'd knocked down poor old Helen Hayes's big theater. So the little theater was being renamed. And we organized an event where we were going to put her feet in cement outside like Grandma's Chinese. Okay, so we had this block of cement and Helen Hayes came along and she trodden it and everything, but it was separate, so you could lift it off so that it could go dry before it was then going to be put in the sidewalk later. So, we do it. It's really funny. She's really sweet, saying, I've been wanting to get rid of these shoes for years. I mean, we had a great time. Anyway, then we looked around afterwards, and the cement block had disappeared. And we thought, oh, my God, someone's stolen it. And then I thought, oh, my God, someone's stolen it! And we got stories in Time Magazine and Newsweek about how the block of cement with Helen Hayes' feet in had been stolen. Actually, one of the porters had like put it downstairs somewhere and hidden it to make sure it dried okay without being interfered with. But we didn't realize that till later. So we got the Newsweeklies. We got like big stories about who stole Helen Hayes' feet. Now, okay, that didn't sell any tickets or anything, but that was fun. That was one of the fun things you remember. And I'm sure there were, you know, like certain Guys and Dolls stuff, like having hour-long TV specials and things that just work so beautifully on live television that you couldn't believe it. But it's the fun stuff you remember.
What if a producer came to you and said, look, I'm doing a very small show off Broadway. I've got no stars. It's a new play. I've got nothing. There's really nothing I can give you to sell this show.
Oh. I'd say, can you pay $5,000 a week?
I can't do that. I can't even pay my rent.
Then why on earth would I go near you?
What kind of advice would you give to someone that needs to get some attention for their show but doesn't have a lot of assets?
No, I think it's unfortunately it is so driven by what those assets are, and if it is an unbelievably great new script with an actors you haven't heard of by a hot young director, but it's someone like me, I can call in favors and I say, please give up 90 minutes of your life. You have to go see this. But I'd say to someone who doesn't know anybody, it's really impossible. And you know, let's not pretend. And I think you kind of need to get into a playwright festival or need to be part of one of those festivals to at least be considered in that mix. And then hopefully you can beg a couple of intelligent bloggers to come along and start the ball rolling that way. But I think that, you know, that there is no sort of silver bullet to suddenly say, you know, if you do this, you will get this. It's the competition is just way too much. It's like an actor who wants to work on Broadway. I think just get out there and audition. But not to be flip, I do think you can help yourself by doing what I say we do all the time, which is, what is your story? Why should someone not stay home and watch Kevin Spacey on TV and come see your thing? Not change your life, but why are they going to feel that they've invested their time? Because we've now determined that money is not the main thing. It's people's time that matters. Why should they give up their time? And you can't just use hyperbole. You have to connect in some way. You have to, connect to what is happening now, how this relates to something that's happening now. How does it relate to Star Wars? How does it relate to Donald Trump? But I mean, what is it of? Why is it of the moment? Why should someone do this? So I think getting to be part of a festival is certainly, I'd say, a way to do it, because at least then you have a shot of having people who are looking for that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the festival circuit for emerging artists myself.
Yeah, I just, and again, I don't want to sound glib about it, but I think just finding enough money to just get it on off Broadway, you're not doing yourself any favors.
Okay, Adrian, my last question. I want you to imagine that the genie from Aladdin, yes, appears.
Wish, did I hear wish?
Wow, that's very good. And the genie says to you, Adrian, I know you got a Tony Award last year, but I'm gonna go one better for you. And I'm gonna grant you one wish. What is the one thing that drives you so crazy about Broadway, that makes you mad, that makes you so angry, keeps you up at night and like, ugh, if I could only change this? What's the one thing that you would have this genie change?
That's snap of that fingers? So complicated. I think it all comes down to, I want more people to see the shows. So what can we do, whether it's ticketing, schedule, education, access? We haven't talked about diversity, which is so important now, and rightfully. So how can we make this more audience friendly without patronizing the audience and without lying to the audience? What are the things we can do? And so, I'd like the genie to make everyone think, wow, I really want to go to see a show because it makes me feel good. It also makes me feel like I spent my time wisely. That's a terribly evasive answer. But there is no one thing. Ticketing is a ridiculous problem. Real estate is a ridiculous problem. Performance schedules are a ridiculous problem. I mean, there are many things. Challenge. Sorry, not problem, challenge. But it ultimately comes down to, how can I get as wide a number of people of different cultures, backgrounds, experience wanting to come to Broadway? And I want the genie to tell them all that that's all they want to do. That's it.
All day long.
All day long. Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for doing this and for everything you do for the theater and for having the best accent on Broadway as well.
Can you believe he's lived here 50 years and he sounds like this?
It's an act.
It's an act.
Big thanks to Adrian and to all of you for listening. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Don't forget, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern Time. How to sell tickets with social media. Check out the blog for more info or sign up for free at theproducersperspectivepro.com.
I'm gonna be a producer. Look out, Broadway.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.